At home with us. And we have Victoria with us and Marjorie. And here in person, we have Sylvia, Maria, Kathleen, Morgan.
Chibi.
Chibi. And I think that's Laura back there. It's really hard to recognize people. And Alicia and I forgot.
Richard.
Richard and Rick. Bill, Nancy, and Sue. And I think I can remember my name. My name is Joe.
Richard, could you spell your name for us?
Yeah, it's P-R-A-C-H-E-E-T-I.
Prachiti. Thank you.
That's even better. Thank you. Yeah.
I have a visual memory, so if I can see the letters in my mind, I will remember.
I think still in a year. And, you know, last year, as I started to think about what I wanted to be talking about, I decided that I tend to get very distracted and I like the new shiny objects, whatever comes up, and I chose something to talk about, and I actually stuck to it for about three quarters of the year, and so I decided I would make it now a tradition for me, and I was thinking, okay, so what do I want to talk about this year? And I realized, partly because of some things that are happening in my professional life, but just in general, I really wanted to focus on basics, on the fundamentals. Because what had been coming up for me professionally was around what's the foundation of what I do. And I realized, well, this is really important here. And then, Misha, you very kindly started with the Four Noble Truths last week, so thank you. I did not talk to her about it, but we do tend to go in some more directions. So the thing that I want to start with, and there's so many roads I could take about what fundamentals are, but one of the most fundamental things that I really find I rely on is this idea and ideal concept, the very real feeling and energy of what we call the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva is someone who is determined to help beings before becoming enlightened herself or himself. So it's kind of like, I think, Sylvia, you like to use this expression of you get on the bus last when you're the Bodhisattva. You help everybody else get on. And as I understand the history of this word, I think I heard Reb Anderson say this, who's a Zen teacher and quite a scholar, so I'll believe him, that Bodhisattva is a word that is unique to Buddhism, unique to the early texts of Buddhism, probably never occurred before it was used there. And it's used to refer to the Buddha. Buddha is the Bodhisattva, like the only one at first. But then later, when the Mahayana tradition came into being about 300 or 400 years after the time of Buddha, this idea of this being committed to defer awakening until everyone else has been relieved of suffering, it becomes, as I say, this ideal of practice. So we have, for instance, Kuan Yin, who's the Bodhisattva of compassion, who sometimes is depicted with the 1,000 arms and 1,000 hands, and in each hand is an eye, and the eye hears. I love that. And the mixture of senses, the eye hears all the cries of suffering. And then there's another bodhisattva you might have heard of, who's Jizo, who's also known as the Earth Bodhisattva. And is particularly seen to be the protector of young children and young travelers. And he or she makes the vow to return again and again to the hell realms to free beings. So pretty potent imagery. And as I say, this idea, this ideal of the bodhisattva, it represents psychic energy, or what we call an archetype. The energy that I think we all share and have, that we want to relieve suffering of other people. When you see somebody suffering, when it's somebody you love, and sometimes it might not even be anybody you know, sometimes there arises this energy to be helpful, to, as we say, to save all beings. But I want to say a little bit about that word, because that has troubled me from the beginning of starting Buddhist practice. For one thing, I associated with Jesus and saving people. I associated with a, it sort of sets up a inferior and superior position. I'm so great I can save you, or I'm so lowly that I need you to save me. So I prefer to say, for a long time I like to say awaken with, or accept. I do look to accept everything and everyone, but lately the one, and lately by me, probably for the last 5 years or so, I really prefer this word meeting. It makes a vow to meet. So as I think about where I want to put my energy and study this here, the way of the bodhisattva seems a particularly good place to start. And I hope it will be a good place to find myself in the middle, not necessarily with the bodhisattva, but with other foundational ideas and practices. And a good place to end the year, but you never know, I can be thrown off course very easily. I think right now this idea of the bodhisattva is particularly important. It just seems like this brilliant energy that is very inspirational to me, to be able to meet beings and mitigate suffering. It makes it seem possible for me to dedicate my practice, to dedicate my awareness. But it's not just anything that the Buddha put his attention to. He focused in his very first Dharma talk and throughout his teaching, and even at the end of his life, to what Misha talked about, that's really suffering, causes of suffering, and the ending of suffering. And witnessing suffering, I think you probably all know, this is difficult work. And seeing the mess that the world seems to be in right now, with shootings and war and floods and displacement of people, gun violence, it really can be overwhelming to face what happens, even in our own individual lives, with loved ones who may be sick, or I'm sure we've all lost loved ones in our lives. If we're alive for very long and realize we can't escape that. We need that energy every day to be able to do something. And every time that we're generous and we have that impulse to give, every time that we pay attention and we don't turn away from someone who's in pain, even in these small ways, we're enacting the energy of the bodhisattva. But the, I guess the expert on the bodhisattva was a man named Shantideva, and he lived in the 8th century. He studied and practiced at the center in India, which is still there, but there aren't monks living there anymore. There are stupas there. But in the 8th century, this was quite a vital place in the world. And Buddhists from all traditions, they didn't make these distinctions like we do of Mahayana and we're Zen and you're, you know, Theravadin or whatever. They all came. It's very fertile exchange. But the story goes that Shantideva was a little bit of a ne'er-do-well. Didn't always show up, you know, for thousand on time, and he didn't have the right thing to study when he did show up, and people just kind of saw him as a lazy guy. And then one day he was asked, and I think according to the story, maybe all of his peers were laughing at him, ha ha ha, it's your turn, you give the Dharma talk. And he said, well, okay, would you like to hear something, you know, that we've all talked about before, or do you want to hear something new? And they said, oh, tell us something new. So he ascended, I guess they had a very high seat, and he ascended the seat, and he proceeded to give this lecture on the way of the Bodhisattva. And it's a book that's probably about 150 pages long. So it was a very long lecture. And I won't go on that long, right? But it said that as he got towards the end, he rose higher and higher and higher until he just rose up into the heavens and wasn't seen again. Wonderful story. I love this story. So in the Bodhisattva Way of Life, he focuses on the paramitas, which are the perfections, the practices of bodhisattvas, and the practices that we take up. Meditation, certainly, of bringing enough energy to our practice, morality, wisdom, of course, and patience. So it's patience that I'd like to focus on tonight. But sometimes it seems to me this is the root of our predicament. It seems to me that we really don't know how to channel, understand, or transform our difficult emotions, especially anger. Recently, I think about a week ago, I don't know if anybody here watches football, it really it's a little bit of what my son calls cognitive dissonance. You know, if you really care about people, how can you watch people hurting one another? But anyway, that's another talk. But Rick showed me this video after the game at 49ers won, which, you know, we felt very happy about. But what was the team that played for you guys?
Dallas.
Oh, Dallas, Mavericks, of course, old rivalry. So,
Cowboys.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, not Mavericks.
Yeah, the Mavericks is basketball. Thank you. Oh, well. As usual, I'm learning my own story. So, the Dallas Cowboys. And there was this video that showed up on Facebook or wherever of a man who's watching the game. He's got, I guess, all of his family there, and the Cowboys lost. And he smashed his TV. And then he picked it up and he threw it on the floor. And you have this picture of all his gathered friends, kind of. And I'm looking at it the same way. It's like, what is the matter with people that we really don't know what to do? We're like infants. And all anger is, it's just energy. I mean, we have all kinds of energies, but it can be a very destructive energy. If it's not channeled, if it's not transformed, it can upend us, like the television, and as well as other people. But it's also known as a secondary emotion, and that means that it's not primary. It's not what comes first. It is kindled by something else, sometimes fear, sometimes shame, but mostly we can say whatever the thing that is underneath the anger, it's our vulnerability, and we don't like to be vulnerable, even though we are supremely vulnerable. As the Buddha said, you know, we are going to experience suffering. No getting out of that one. So recently, a friend of mine shared with me this quote. I'm afraid I didn't write down who it was from. I believe it was a minister, Christian minister. But she says, I'm beginning to realize that all of my big negative emotions, anger, intolerance, crankiness, the list goes on, have their root in my feeling vulnerable. So I've been practicing feeling the vulnerability rather than the secondary feeling. If I'm able to say, I'm feeling vulnerable, rather than you're making me mad, then there is much more room for connection. And Shantideva, from 1300 years ago, he told us, right, the first verse of this chapter, the destructiveness of anger. He says, whatever wholesome deeds, such as venerating the Buddhas and generosity that have been amassed over a thousand eons, will all be destroyed in one moment of anger. I don't know if that's anybody has ever experienced anything like that. It called to mind somebody I knew years ago who was pretty angry with me and erupted, and it took me a very long time to be able to trust that person again. Everything can be destroyed just by one moment, all the good things that you do. And then Shanti goes on, there is no evil like hatred, and no fortitude like patience. Thus, I should strive in various ways to meditate on patience. So I thought a little bit about what are these various ways that we might meditate on patience. And Shantideva gives a lot of them. And if you want to spend some time with this chapter, I recommend it. The language is a little off-putting, but this is what I've taken. There's a wonderful translation by Stephen Batchelor that you can download online, and it's written in a form of English that we can understand. But one of the first things that Shantideva talks about is becoming acquainted with the small harms, with the small things that happen to us. And that way we learn to accept the bigger ones. So noticing, let's say, when you get a splinter in your finger and how that hurts, and maybe there's an impulse to do like that. But then maybe you notice that, and maybe you spend some time with it, and you recognize, oh, this is something I can take care of. Used to be a wonderful book that we read our kids when they were growing up. Morgan, maybe you remember it, because I'm sure I read it to everybody here. It's called Big Dog, Little Dog. And it's all about, the tagline of the story is, why make small problems into big ones? And that's essentially what Shantideva is saying. Get acquainted with the small things, and you'll get better at creating bigger ones. He also says there's really something good about suffering. No, this isn't something that we just want to throw away and get rid of. Suffering dispels anger and it promotes compassion. When we realize that we suffer, that others who are like us, as Pema Chodron is always saying, just like us, this other person is suffering, what can we do to feel? Another thing is to recognize that anger arises from, that suffering and anger, but suffering arises from conditions. They don't like make themselves up. It's because of the way everything is arising together that there may be some suffering. So why get angry at conditions? So, as some of you know, right now I'm having some pain with my hip. I could get mad at my hip. Sometimes I do. But, the causes and conditions of being on this earth for 73 years and probably not taking care of my body in the best way possible and a whole host of other things that I don't even know or recognize, I can't get angry at them. That's just what is, and that's what causes the suffering. So, relax, I tell myself. And likewise, when other people, quote unquote, make us angry, it's a result of their conditions. It really isn't something to hold against them. And actually, we can be one of those conditions. Love this. So Shanti Davis says, why did I previously commit those actions because of which others now cause me harm? So it's like, why did I do those things that now other people are making things hard for me? Since everything is related to my actions, why should I bear malice towards my enemies? And somebody recently said to me, and it was, I can't remember, but somebody even in this room, but I love this, they said, I realize that when I say, save all beings from suffering, I'm really saying, save all beings from me. All the things that I do that are difficult for people. And I really have to laugh at that. Yes. So, and I'm skipping a lot, but finally, patience is related to our awakening and the attainment of Buddhahood. Shanti Davis says, why do I not see that my future attainment of Buddhahood, as well as glory, renown, and happiness in this very life, all come from pleasing sentient beings? Every happiness we have, I think this is probably pretty true, comes because we have gotten along or pleased or been generous with others. While in cyclic existence, patience causes beauty, health, and renown. Because of these, I shall live for a very long time and win the extensive pleasures of the universal chakra kings. So Shanti Deva, essentially, in many of these verses, what he's saying is, anger's bad, get rid of it. However, I think I take a slightly softer line, because I think anger, we don't want to get rid of it. We do want to harness it, transform it. We don't want to act on it. But anger itself gives such valuable information about us, about where we are with other people. I don't want to get rid of it. I do, as I say, want to transform. So here we are, it's a new year. And where we start, Pema Chodron says we start where we are. So wherever we are, that's a good place to be. And David White says to start close in. He says, start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing close in, the step you don't want to take. Start with the ground you know, the pale ground beneath your feet, your own way to begin the conversation. Start with your own questions. Give up on other people's questions. Don't let them smother something simple. To hear another's voice, follow your own voice. Wait until that voice becomes an intimate, private ear that can really listen to another. Start right now. Take a small step you can call your own. Don't follow someone else's. Don't follow someone else's heroics. Be humble and focused. Start close in. Don't make mistake. Don't mistake that other for your own. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing. Close in. The step you don't want to take. So, as I say, sometimes the thing that is closest to us, this is what David White is saying, we just want to skip over and do something else that's fancier, but really where you are right here, whether it's with anger or greed or delusion. And we're always with delusion. We've got plenty of material, even if you don't think for anybody else's. You don't have to listen to me or anybody else. It's this vow. And I think that all includes this vow to meet all beings. And then got this other quote, just as I'm working on this and thinking about this, from Martin Buber, who says, all real living is meeting. I think that'll sort of be my motto for a while. All real living is meeting. Wonderful to meet you all here. And come in under the allotted time.